Hey, everybody. Coming up on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, it's our Media Roundtable number 5 with guests Jimmy Traina of Sports Illustrated and in studio...
John Arand. I want to call this Media Roundtable V.
We could call it that, but of course, you are from the Sports Business Daily, John, so you must give your title.
Oh, people don't know that yet?
An hour of sports media nerd talk coming up on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. Hey, everybody, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. This week, a return of the Sports Illustrated Media Roundtable. I believe this is Media Roundtable number 5 with John Arand of the Sports Business Daily and Journal and Jimmy Traina of Sports Illustrated. No grand intros today, no giving the resume and highlights of Jimmy and John. We will just get right into this. John, we are taping this on Tuesday, May 16th. Both of us just got back from the ESPN Upfronts. That is the annual presentation that ESPN executives and talent do for media buyers. They're essentially trying to get people to buy their product for the year. Obviously, all the networks have them. And John, I think and Jimmy, I know you've seen this news as well. John, to me, there's been other upfronts that have had bigger news coming out of it. And of course, everything, at least in my opinion, with these upfronts, the layoffs sort of cast, and this is just my take, they cast a pall over everything. It's a little hard to sort of watch people celebrate up there as others lost their job. I get that it's business, and I'm sure ESPN's PR chief would tell me that it's business, and I understand that, but to me, there's still a sort of human cost and capital there. But the main takeaways of today, I think, John, is that the schedule is going to be dramatically different in 2018 for both ESPN and ESPN2. So let's start with there. ESPN starting January 2018, the Mike Greenberg Show, 7 to 10 a.m. every morning, followed by First Take, the show that threatened Kevin Durant on the air, followed by Bomani and Pablo. That's Bomani Jones and Pablo Torre now getting their own hour show on ESPN, and then generally speaking, stays sort of the same outside the lines. NFL Live, The Jump, Sports Nation, highly questionable, Around the Horn, Pardon the Interruption, SC6, whatever game is on, and Van Pelt. SportsCenter live from 7 to 10 a.m. on ESPN2, but then, John, not live again on linear television until 6 with Jemele Hill and Michael Smith. So I realize I'm sort of going long here just to set all this up, but John, obviously the big takeaways, the new shows on ESPN, particularly the Greenberg Show, and the fact that there's no way to spin this. The Sports Center we grew up on, the flagship show of ESPN, the sports show of record, is quietly sort of disappearing from linear television.
You know, the Sports Center that we grew up with hasn't been around for years, really. And I think that I think this is where it has been going. And so when everybody's talking about ESPN trying to reimagine SportsCenter, this is how they're reimagining it. It's basically, I sort of liken it to talk radio. You know, this is sports talk radio. You have, you know, Mike and Mike in the morning, basically, you know, going into Bomani, going into, you know, ending up with Scott Van Pelt. These are guys that have cut their teeth in radio, their personalities, and it's going to be a big personality-driven show. I mean, one of the things that they talked about at the upfront was, you know, they started with Scott Van Pelt's show, and you know, they wanted to see it, and they were very happy with how that went. So that sort of allowed them to go and go through this strategy where they do more personalities like that.
Jimmy, before we get to you, John, I mean, again, we're not going to know obviously until 2019, but is this? They have to do something. Obviously, we understand that SportsCenter's numbers are down, particularly on ESPN too. But is this the right strategy? Is building a network around, you know, sort of opinion-driven programming, for the most part, at least in the morning, that's very much what FS1 is doing. Now, I don't think they're going to be as provocative as FS1, but ultimately, you know, that's a tricky chore to me. And I know we're going to disagree on this, but Mike Greenberg entering a space with every traditional morning show, GMA, Today, CBS, all the cable shows that are having record ratings because of the news out of the White House, so your Morning Joes and Fox and Friends, et cetera. And then you got to beat the sports-specific shows, Good Morning Football, even though it's a very small audience, there's still an audience there, and the new FS1 show and what NBC Sports Network has on. So How do you see the strategy? Like, and again, we're not going to know until 2019, 2020, but there's no guarantee this is going to work.
Well, I can tell you what the wrong strategy is, and that's to have the sports center that we grew up with. So I think that if they were to say, we're going to have a highlight-driven show where we're going to show you the highlights that happened yesterday, that's what hasn't been rating. That's what hasn't been doing well. I happen to think that Mike Greenberg, I really think that he's going to have a good show on. I think that he's somebody who for how long did he have his radio show?
18 years. Well, good show is different than will it rate. You would agree? Like, he may have a good show. The question is, will people watch it? That's the question.
Oh, I have no clue if it'll be a good show. I think it'll rate.
Okay.
I think that he was somebody, I mean, you know sports radio better than I do. It's a completely local medium.
Right.
And he was somebody for 18 years with a national show that won most of the markets he was in.
Well, that's not true. He didn't win most of the markets he was in. But to their credit, they were in a ton of markets, 400 plus. They had a ton of affiliates, and that was success. You didn't, if you were them, you didn't have to win the markets. In many markets, you just sort of had to appear. But and this is no disrespect to Greenberg Golic. No big national name in sports beats local. I mean, ESPN Radio, Fox Sports Radio, they have literally no impact, or not even literally, New York, Philly, the Washington, Boston for sure, especially on the East Coast, they're essentially non-existent. But in terms of being on air and having like affiliates, Mike and Mike were unbelievable. I mean, they were essentially, they appeared in essentially every major city, even if they weren't rating.
And while I think that there is, it's a crowded field, as you said, in terms of morning television, it's not particularly crowded if I want to hear sports talk. Hmm. And I think that there's something there. If I know that they've made it akin to like a morning show of sports, you know, will that work? I'm awful at predicting whether a show is going to work or not, but it seems to have as good a chance as anything to me.
All right, Jimmy, we'll bring you in. You've sort of heard the discussion of ESPN's new lineup and specifically the Greenberg show, which if you're a sports fan, you are going to be inundated with commercials. If you think you got a lot of commercials for Undisputed on Fox, wait for the Greenberg show to come, because they're going to be pushing that everywhere. What, Jimmy, I'll just sort of open the mic to you. You can go anywhere you want.
I mean, I think it will... I know you sort of are pushing the narrative that there's a lot of competition, which is obviously true, but I do agree with John that I think it'll rate.
By the way, I don't mean to interrupt you. I think that's a first. You agree with me on something here.
Well, but for different reasons. I think I don't know if it'll rate well, but I do think it'll rate, simply because I think if you're a sports fan, and I know, you know, SportsCenter has declined over the years, but if you're a sports fan and you want some sports news in the morning, you're programmed to go to one channel and one channel only, and that's ESPN. So I think it's, as a default, it'll get viewers. Do I think the Mike Greenberg led, you know, talk show is going to generate buzz and get people all hot and bothered? No, but I do think, because it's sort of like the Francesa thing, you know, WFAN 1-6, you know, that's prime time where New Yorkers are going to check out that landscape. You wake up in the morning and, you know, there was a crazy thing in an NBA playoff game the night before. You're going to put on ESPN. You're not going to put on FS1. So I think from that standpoint, Mike Greenberg has a big advantage.
Jimmy, what do you make of the show that's going to follow First Take, a show with Bomani Jones and Pablo Torre? If nothing else, this guy's going to get an excellent lead-in, because First Take will draw, you know, 400,000, let's say in the low time, 350. If there's a really crazy topic, NFL related, they may get 500,000. So they'll get a good lead-in, but we are talking 12 o'clock on ESPN, so you got to figure out who your audience is.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I say this every time we do a podcast, but I have no idea who watches these shows and who's home at 12 o'clock in the afternoon to watch a show. I have no idea who the audience is.
You're right there, Jimmy?
Yeah, I'm fine. No, I'm good. I'm good. Okay. I don't know who you can put in that 12 to 1 on ESPN. I have no idea what show you could put there that people would watch or, you know, get excited about. I mean, we're talking about daytime sports television. It's not exactly, you know, Colbert versus Kimmel versus Fallon.
Let me agree with Jimmy on that point. We spend so much time talking about daytime TV that gets so few ratings. ESPN is going to be successful or not based on, you know, the NFL, live NFL games, college football games, and these live games. So, you know, whether or not Bomani's show works, you know, it doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things. It's a pretty small bar that he has to jump over, in my opinion.
That's interesting. You are right. I'm certainly guilty of this, giving these afternoon and morning shows probably more sort of write-ups than their ratings would reflect. But, you know, that's, I think, John, what ultimately happens when you have personalities, right? People say things or outrageous things. Like, for example, you're a Washington guy. You're a huge Wizards fan. The Washington Post, and to their credit, has now spent whatever it's been, 6 or 7 years on Colin Coward's continued, my words here, character assassination of John Wall. And you're not going to get that on SportsCenter, or you're not going to get that for probably on a live game. So, you know, we're all guilty, I guess, of taking the bait. But that's what happens, is people say stuff on these kind of, you know, opinion-driven shows, and you pick up on it. In Coward's case with Wall, you wish that management would have sort of stepped in and if at least acknowledged what was an incredible and incorrect character assassination that lasted for a long time. But that's the kind of stuff that gets picked up.
Yeah, and that's hilariously circular, too, because I guess the beef started on the very first game when he did the Dougie.
Regular season game, right.
Yep. And all of a sudden, like, he couldn't change his opinion. And John Wall, ever since then, I mean, I'm a Wizards fan and I live in D.C. Ever since then, John Wall has stayed out of trouble, been a good teammate, been good in the community. I mean, he's been a complete asset to the entire market of Washington, D.C. And you know, so Colin Coward keeps going at it. The Washington Post keeps reporting it. That gets Colin Coward to go at it even more. It gets the Washington Post to get more clicks and report on it more. And it's just such a stupid circular thing that happens now with those shows.
Yeah, I mean, I did a profile of Wall prior to his first game. I actually went to the Garden, talked to Flip Sanders and his teammates, talked to people at Kentucky. Quality guy. And so different than what Coward tried to portray him as, essentially, you know, like, you know, I don't want my point guards without a father figure. This guy's just a dancing. I mean, you know, he's calling him basically an urban punk. Let's be real. And so that was horseshit. And I'm glad he's actually taken the stick for that. But nothing ever changes, because the management that you would think maybe who could step in and say, hey, man, that's just not really reflective of what we want to be.
Because he just did it again last week.
They never say anything. Anyway, we'll get off this topic. But, Jimmy, you take a look at the schedule. You didn't really sort of get into this. John did. That ESPN has now, which was their upfront announcement. What are your thoughts on SportsCenter, Jimmy? Obviously, they're going to try to rebrand a little bit, not a little bit, but digitally, so that, you know, if you have ESPN 3 or you're checking out your cell phone or Sling or whatever, you're going to see stuff there. And they've brought a lot of high-profile anchors to front the SportsCenter brand, right? Sage Steele, Kenny Mayne, Steve Levy, Buchagras. Obviously, they have these singular shows with Hill and Smith and Van Pelt. Where do you, Jimmy, in 2017... in May, where do you see SportsCenter, both now and heading forward?
I mean, I just see it going down even more, and it has nothing to do with the hosts. Those are all fine hosts that you listed, but the landscape has changed, and people do not consume highlights by watching SportsCenter. It's just the way it is now. And, you know, I think with NFL Network, MLB Network, Twitter, this, that, and the other thing, there's no reason to tune into SportsCenter. So they can, you know, trot out all the hosts they want, and it's not a reflection of the host's skills. It's a new way that people consume highlights, and I don't think people are going to tune in for stuff other than highlights. So,
and Jimmy,
I
you're
think the slippery slope for them.
You like that Good Morning Football show, right? You continue to tell me you like that.
It's a good show, and I like baseball. Most mornings I start the morning with MLB Network just to get the highlights from the night before. And Good Morning Football is good. It's the off season now, so I'm not tuning in as much as I did during the regular season. But there's plenty of ways to get highlights without ESPN. And ESPN, from what people tell me, doesn't really show highlights.
John, is there anything else you took away from the upfronts today? Again, I'm not in management. I understand that ESPN has to continue with business. I totally get it. And that's the world, and I'd probably be a shitty manager because I probably don't think like managers. But I sat there watching that stuff, and I saw all the personalities on stage, and everybody's like hugging each other and bro hugs, et cetera, et cetera. And I couldn't help but think of like the people who were laid off like a couple weeks ago. And like, you know, there's like so much celebration on the stage. It felt like, so probably shitty analogy, but it felt like they were the winners of the Hunger Games, and those who got fired were those who were killed. And oh, let's remember them, and they were great. But it left a bad sort of a little bit of a bad taste in my mouth when I saw all the personalities that ESPN sort of trumped out on stage to let you know that they were back in business. But you work for Sports Business Daily, so I imagine you're going to tell me that that's just what happens, man. Life goes on, and they're a business, and they gotta move forward.
That sounds so heartless. But look, the point of this to me, this isn't like a state of ESPN press briefing where that would have been completely untoward.
Right.
They invited a bunch of advertisers to a theater in New York, and they're trying to get those advertisers interested and excited in supporting their programming. So for me, probably my biggest takeaway, more so than the daily lineups, was ESPN just coming out and saying, here we are, we're still the biggest, we still have the most, and we're still the best. And it was sort of an acknowledgement, they had a really bad quarter.
Yeah.
They've had a very bad spring. And this was their chance to get in front of these advertisers and say, like, basically, we did have a bad quarter, but look at us now. I mean, what I was most struck with was John Skipper, who, when he comes out, he always tells jokes. He always has a big smile, and
right.
He really gets it. He was deadly serious, and he came out, and it was sort of like, you know what? We are still in business, and we're still good. And he didn't even crack a smile. I don't think I've ever seen John Skipper speak where he didn't crack a smile or a joke or a quip. Nothing like that.
Yeah, that's a pretty good observation. And I, even though ultimately Skipper is the one who makes the decision, I do believe like he feels it. And that's not going to make the people who were fired feel better. But over the course of interviewing him and knowing him, the guy does care about journalism. And he cares about content. There's no doubt. It's not, and no disrespect to the Fox guys. I've never believed any Fox Sports executive cares about journalism. I'm not saying they should. But they don't. They don't pretend to walk that talk. They don't care about it. This is a guy with print in his background, Rolling Stone, etc. I think he cares. And I think at least on that stage, he knew what the climate was, and to maybe joke around for him wouldn't be appropriate. But John Oren, and Jimmy, I'll get to you in a second. I got to be honest, though. You got to take questions if you're John Skipper. And he did not take questions from the press today for the first time in maybe the 7 or 8 upfronts that I've covered. And I feel like that's part of the job, man. Like, you get the praise when you have these incredible numbers and, you know, you're called a genius for buying these live rights and you put on this incredible World Cup and you care about journalism and you hire great journalists, which John Skipper, all those things are true and he deserves all that on his ledger. But to me, you got to take the questions today. You got to, the buck stops with you. And people, I think, ESPN viewers have a right to know why you made these decisions and why these people lost their jobs and how that impacts the company going forward, even though there are capable executives below John who can answer those questions too.
Yeah, I was surprised that he did not make himself available afterwards to answer questions, and I'm still not quite sure why he didn't. So that's something that I really don't want to speak about because I don't know what the reasons were too much.
Yeah, I think they seem to mention scheduling, and I'm not saying they're not being forthcoming with that, but I feel like I feel like that's part of the job, man. If you're the president of ESPN, you speak at the upfronts to reporters. That to me is sort of, that's part of the assignment.
Let me also mention that what I thought was the part of the upfront that I'm certain you like the most and I like the most, but it fell really flat to the advertisers was when Wright Thompson came out.
Yeah, that's not my favorite part, but I agree. It did fall flat. I think Wright did a great job of presenting, but there was no reaction in the room to magazine and long form journalism and storytelling. It was an oddly dead room at that point.
Yeah, and it was great because he was talking about these great stories and this journalism that ESPN is committed to, and that spoke to every single reporter in that room. It certainly spoke to me. I mean, I loved it. But he didn't get a lot of applause for it, and it was just eerily. He told some jokes. Nobody laughed even politely. There was an odd vibe.
I mean, Jimmy, look where Jimmy and I work, and I think we know how hard it is to, you know, journalism costs a lot of money, and to get people to buy into it is not the easiest thing in the ad community. I mean, that's why one of the, you know, ironically enough, Donald Trump has been a godsend for journalism because he's getting people to invest in the Times and the Washington Post, but it's a tough go in sports, even for ESPN. Jimmy, I will segue to one other piece of news from ESPN that came out by us on Sunday, but then was confirmed today on Monday, and that's Beth Mowins and Rex Ryan getting the second game of the Monday night doubleheader to start this season, September 11th, Chargers-Broncos. It's a very big story to me, and it's only because the NFL is really like the glass ceiling when it comes to sports broadcasting. Like play-by-play, NFL is almost like the last glass ceiling for women because we have not had a woman call a regular season game in 30 years, and Gail Sirens is the only one to do it, and she did it once. So basically, in the history of the NFL, there's been one woman who's called one game, and that's it. Essentially, in every other sport, we've seen most of this stuff break through. What did you make of hearing that? And Rex is interesting too, obviously, because Rex has no experience as an NFL game analyst.
I was going to say, I was way more surprised by the Rex Ryan announcement than the Beth Mowins announcement. I was shocked they gave Rex that because he's not going to be doing games. He's going to be a studio host, and he has no experience. So that surprised me more than the other thing. I don't know. I mean, obviously, like you said, she's only the second woman ever to call an NFL game, first in 30 years. But on the flip side of that, I also think, I mean, it's one game. So while it is, I guess, a landmark, it's, you know, it's one game. So I don't know what kind of confetti you want to drop from the ceiling for that.
John, you got a take on that?
Here comes liberal ESPN again, Richard. Now, I don't really have a take on it. I'm curious to see. It does kind of feel like a stunt of stores.
You think
of
so? Sorts. I mean, you know, she's. I mean, I understand a lot of people are going to say that, but she called the Raiders in the preseason. I mean, she just. I feel like she's.
I think she's very good.
Right.
I think she's very good. It has that feel.
I understand because you're not assigning. College football game caller number two, you're not assigning Brent or Reese Davis type.
Yeah, or you're also not giving her, like, you know, the number two or three college football gig. This is a one-off game that happens. It's going to be the lowest rated Monday Night Football game of the year because it's
although higher rated than last year, though.
True enough. So that's my only thing. But look, it's a long time coming. I think it's great, you know, and I think she's very good, and I think it's deserving.
Jimmy, weigh in.
John's point, they have used that game many times before as a stunt.
Right.
Didn't they have Mike and Mike call it?
Mike and Mike, yes. Mike and Mike was a complete stunt. Absolutely.
Right. Totally. Berman was a stunt, I think, right, for his couple years too. So yes, absolutely. I mean, the Mike and Mike assignment was essentially done as a promotional tool for Mike and Mike.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, but you know what? I feel like you got it. If you're Beth, I mean, that's what's available, and you got to take it, and who knows what it leads to.
Oh, run to it.
Well,
absolutely.
It has nothing to do with her.
No, I understand where you guys are coming from. I see your point. I mean, you know, this was obviously my story Sunday. Sorry, John, for finally beating you on a story.
Yeah, I gave Hoffheimer some grief about that.
And as you can tell by reading the story, not a latte for me.
Your stories are never lattes. Mine are always lattes. That's amazing.
I'm not saying that they have not given me stories, but that was not one at all. Trust me. They were not happy that broke Sunday night. And I intentionally let them know about 12 minutes before we published. But what was I going to say? Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot on my Twitter feed, obviously, when you get past the, you know, ESPN is liberal, this is social justice warriors putting Beth Mowins up there, you are going to get a lot of people, I think, who see what you and Jimmy are saying, then you're just going to see that assignment as a stunt because it's a single game and she doesn't get to do another game. I hope for her sake she gets an opportunity elsewhere in the NFL down the road.
When did social justice get to be a bad thing, by the way?
I don't know. I mean, I know Jimmy gets a lot of the SJW. When did you get that, Jim? When did that start?
I don't get that. But I mean, I see it, but I don't get it.
Oh, you're not whenever you tweet about whenever you have an anti-Trump tweet, you don't get that?
No, I get Snowflake.
Snowflake. Oh, it's same. I mean, it's in the same family.
I mean,
right?
one of the tenets of the Catholic faith is social justice. And now it's like a bad thing. It's bizarre.
Maybe it's a, I don't know, it's an FS1 thing. John, let's, speaking of FS1, Fox's slogan now is Fox owns the fall. I love this. Why don't they own the winter and the spring, just the fall? But their thought behind this, obviously, Jimmy's old employer, is that they have the World Series, they have the NFC, which means they have the Cowboys, which is like ratings gold. They have Big Ten now, including Ohio State, Michigan, which is a great game. And so I guess you were at the Fox Upfronts as the second favorite reporter behind Mike McCarthy. You were invited. I was not. I'm way down on the list. And so what is their pitch to the advertising community? ESPN's pitch is we're still in business. We're still the big dogs on the block. Here's our new schedule with all these opinionists. What's Fox Sports pitching to the community?
All right, so this wasn't a Fox Sports up front. It was a Fox Broadcasting up front.
Okay.
And so the whole idea behind up fronts is that networks trot out their entertainment schedules and primetime entertainment schedules to the advertisers. And they say, this is a show that's really going to work. Like Empire's, the cast of Empire was there and different actors and actresses for the different shows. What made the Fox presentation so unique, because I've been going in and out of upfronts for the better part of like 15 years, more than a decade or so.
How are you staying sober?
and this was the first time they led with sports.
Wow.
It felt like an ESPN upfront. They had Joe Buck come out at the beginning. Then they had the NFL pregame crew. They were dressed as rappers and dancing. It was
that sounds horrible.
It was if you could get a video of that. I mean, to see Jimmy Johnson dressed like a rapper and dancing. You know, then Troy Aikman came out. Jimmy's favorite player, A-Rod. No, second favorite player to Jeter, A-Rod is there.
The lovable Alex Rodriguez now, right?
And they focused, they spent the first 15 minutes on sports. And what was interesting about that, Richard, is the amount of grumbles in the room from traditional trade journalists
right.
and the advertisers. And they were like, all we want to do is see what new shows you have.
Right.
We know you have the World Series. And they were flogging the Cubs. And like the Cubs are going to win again, you know, right. the for the first time in 100 years.
So all the people from like Variety and all those places, like, wow, give me my entertainment people. Yeah. They were just all mad at the sports stuff.
Yeah, Joe Flint from the Wall Street Journal actually tweeted out, goes, did they create this just for Oran?
Well, our buddy Anthony Krupe at that Ad Age, who's a terrific reporter, and I totally recommend him following, he's all over this. He has these charts that just show you that Fox's primetime schedule without sports is a train wreck, right? So sports is kind of carrying that network right
so
now.
When I talked to some of the ad buyers after the Fox thing, they said they had to lead with sports because they have such a bad story to tell entertainment wise but
right. Jimmy, do you want to weigh? I'm
just fascinated by one thing. Why did you go to the ESPN up front but not the Fox up front?
I personally was not invited to the Fox one.
That's what I wanted to know.
Yeah, so that's
now, what do you, is that like Jamie Horowitz laying down that edict, like no Richard Deitch?
I don't think so. I think it's honestly more of
Skip Bayless is finally upset with those tweets.
That'd be fun. I think it's honestly more, John could probably back me up on this, it's Fox Entertainment. I don't deal with Fox Entertainment. John was
there.
But John, you covered them more than I do. Did you get it from Fox Entertainment or from Fox Sports?
It came through Fox Sports. But
there it is. It's a message to me, Jim.
They didn't have many.
Richard, who snubbed Richard? That is the question.
Was that an Eddie? I don't like the word. I hate the word critic, Jimmy. As we know, we'll have
a.
I'm a sport. I'm a
Horowitz. Who did it?
I'm a writer reporter who covers sports media and women's basketball.
All I'm going to say is the person who did it needs to buy a vowel.
Is it Eddie Model? Was it him? We'll give him a shot. That's fine. You know, all the Fox PR people I knew back in the day, they've all jetted out of town.
They're not here anymore. Exactly.
That's all they would need is for them to trot out Joe Buck and their NFL crew rapping, and Richard raises his hand and says, "Do you know Rugrats got a 0.4 rating the other day?
Yeah, but I've
Skip Bayless show got a 0.0.
I have a good relationship with Buck. I would wait till somebody else came on stage.
Buck was very funny.
He's always funny. He's as Jimmy and I have always said, he's an incredibly underrated baseball broadcaster. You may not like him in football, and I get that. I don't mind him, but as a baseball broadcaster, been perennially underrated. He's really excellent. All right, so hopefully, John, I will get to go next year to the Fox Up Front. Did Fox?
You got no shot.
But
I don't care. I don't really want to go.
I don't know if you even want to go next year.
No, I don't even like going to the ESPN one anymore. I'm just going because there's...
Because Skipper takes a question afterwards.
Because, you know, the steady drumbeat of Sports Illustrated and my tyrannical bosses, all they want is posts and copies. John, was there anything about FS1 at that upfront, particularly the fact that they just announced, maybe this was a Mike McCarthy scoop, that Nick Wright and Chris Carter are going to do a morning show from New York. Jimmy may know this better than me. 6:30 to 9:30 or... It's not 7 or 6 to 10 or I apologize for not knowing the exact time. I'll find it as we're talking here. But here's the thing, John, about this. If you think that the Mike Greenberg show has a challenging environment with coming into the marketplace, my God, Nick Wright and Chris Carter, this is Everest to try to get some numbers. Though, I will say this about my good buddy Jamie Horowitz. I do think it's a good move because it does give the Bayless show a thematic lead-in that makes more sense than what Fox has now, but I cannot see any possible way that First Things First with Chris Carter and Nick Wright can draw an audience. And there's no disrespect to those guys. It's just there's way too much out there, not to mention the millions of dollars ESPN's going to put behind the marketing campaign for Greenberg.
That was a croupy scoop,
okay.
Actually.
Apologies, Anthony.
The one thing I will say about that, and I think that they are hurt. Look, FS1 is smaller than ESPN. They're going to draw a smaller audience than ESPN. And so if they're going after Greenberg with a similar show, it's going to be a tough road to hoe. The thing that about Nick Wright though, and this is not coming from Jamie Horowitz, or Jamie Dixon. It's, somebody from outside of Fox has told me, like, he's a can't miss. Like, people really rate him highly as an on-air personality. So, you know, if this doesn't work out, and I suspect that it's going to have pretty low ratings, I think that his star is on the rise over there.
Yeah, he's a smart guy. He's a talented guy. He's a good radio host. And so that may be true. I mean, if he, you know, it's like, I think it's in the same way. You have to find the right vehicle at the right place. I think there are a lot of people who think that Katie Nolan could really pop on a show. Garbage Time did not have any kind of ratings like that. So you really, a lot of it is can you find the right producer, the right time slot, but it's just important, the right network.
Isn't that so odd? Have you reported on that? I don't know. Why have we not seen Katie Nolan?
Well, Jimmy is friends with her and talks to her, so let's give the floor to him.
Well, first of all, found out from you, Richard, during one of our very popular Slack conversations that I clicked on that once. I had no idea Fox was not actively putting together something for her. That was
They may be, but they just if they're putting it together, it's taking about as long as Noah took for his arc. It's taken a while.
Right. And she tweeted, you know, I would love to be working again. So that told me, you know, something must be going on. I don't know. But to me, like you just said, they had their upfronts. They're trotting out all these people. And, I mean, they're giving Chris Carter, of all people, a show, and they have nothing for Katie Nolan. It sounds very weird to me.
Yeah, I mean, again, how difficult must it have been to get a Chris Carter? I mean, what kind of sales job did that take? I mean, you know, that's the problem is like, and again, Chris is fine. I'm not trying to knock him. I actually have written some nice things about Chris. But it's at a certain point, John, like this is like, this is where I see trouble for even the Bumani and Pablo show is it just like, and this is where I disagree with just Horowitz's whole premise is at a certain point, if you have just all opinion. Like you can't, if it, the network feels like it starts to sort of sound and feel the same. Now the individuals would say that's not true. We're different. You know, I'm different than Skip Bayless. Skip Bayless is different than Colin Cowherd, but that's sort of my, I think, problem. I think when you do all opinion driven is that I think, this is just my take, that everything just sort of runs into each other. Now, I'm sure programmers at both ESPN and others would say, well, you have a differentiator and this person can rate, and obviously like a First Take rated, but you know, First Take did its ratings, John, because it was blanketed by different things, right? It was, you had back in the day, Mike and Mike, which was different than First Take, and then followed by His and Hers, which was like kind of a different feel than First Take. So that's always what I wonder is, I just wonder how much opinion debate can you do hours and hours and hours in a row to have a successful programming strategy?
Yeah, a focus group of one, that's how I view it. I view it the exact same way. Like like Howard's show with Whitlock, I'm not sure how different that is from the other shows that are surrounding it. They all kind of blend together. It's almost like they're on the same set, and they, you know, just two people leave and two other people come, and they just start, debating with each other.
Jimmy, before you go, and I know you have like more of a harder out than us, but you've been itching to talk about why you dislike Sunday Night Baseball so much, and it's not the greatest segue, but would you like to get into that?
First of all, I feel bad for any big baseball fan in the country that really enjoys watching the sport, because the Yankees and Mets are on Sunday Night Baseball every week. It's absurd. And the Yankees being on the last 2 weeks, I mean, that telecast is unwatchable. They show everything but the game. I mean, the Yankees were playing the Cubs 2 weeks ago, and in the middle of the game, instead of showing the game, they show Buster Olney, who's on the field, to give a 5-minute report on Matt Harvey getting suspended during a Yankees-Cubs game. They cut to the booth every 5 minutes to show Shulman and Boone and Mendoza. They're putting up all these stupid, I mean, the box at home plate for the pitch, and then the box isn't bad enough. Then they put up a dot where the pitch was. I mean, that is one of the worst produced telecasts I've ever seen in my life in sports.
Wow. That is a big statement. John, I'll be very honest.
They tortured me.
I do not watch, or I have not watched in a while, a lot of Sunday Night Baseball. I mean, I did a little bit when Jessica Mendoza started, just to write about her. And I'm certainly not as bothered by her as it seems like others are. I think she's pretty bright.
This has nothing to do with her.
No, I know. I get that. But I'm saying, that's my lead-in, John. Do you watch Sunday Night Baseball, and do you have a take? I don't really have a great informed take. Sunday night is not a time I'm sitting down and watch baseball.
No, I haven't seen it yet this year, but this season. But I want to now. I've had the Wizards and Capitals in the playoffs. Yeah. They're no longer there now, so I can.
I'm much more of an NBA NHL watcher.
They love the in-game interview with the manager. Literally, the only reason they do it is because they can, and it makes it look like, oh, look at us, we're so good, we get the in-game. Meanwhile, there's never been one of those that has made news, that has been important, or has added anything to a broadcast.
Far be it for me to agree with Jimmy Trina and Phil Mushnick on something, but I think they, I shouldn't say I'm agreeing with it, but I anecdotally, based on my Twitter feed, I think these guys are onto something. That broadcast does not seem to get a lot of love, at least on my Twitter feed. Now that doesn't mean anything, you know. As I've always said regarding Twitter, it's indicative of nothing official or scientific. But you know, sometimes you get a little bit of an anecdotal feel, and that seems to be the feel on that. John, do you want to talk about the NBA ratings, which have been fantastic? Maybe that would surprise some people. The NHL playoffs have been far better, as Barkley said. He's correct about that in terms of overtime games and game sevens. But the NBA ratings have been up, and they've been really, really good. And we're talking about this coming off, I know you're a big Wizards guy, coming off a hugely rated Boston-Washington game seven. The Turner guys sent me a note. The Celtics win over the Wizards averaged a 5-4 overnight rating. That's the highest rating on Turner for a non-conference finals telecast since 2012. Best rating for a non-conference finals telecast in 5 years.
And there have been some good big teams in those 5 years that are playing.
So that's a monster rating. We'll get the, 5.4 should, I don't know, maybe 7 million. I don't want to guess. It's always hard to guess in terms of viewers. But why do you think it's up? Is it just, I mean, it's, I love the league. It's a star-driven league, but given the games, you wouldn't have predicted that, but it's up.
No, I think you hit on it. The regular season ratings were not very good. And I think that once the playoffs hit and the games meant something, I mean, this is why Turner and ESPN are paying as much as they're paying for the NBA rights or for the playoffs. And it's a star-driven league. You have the Warriors and the Cavaliers potentially going for a third time, which is a guaranteed ratings bonanza. You have, you know, exciting players. I mean, John Wall is exciting. Boston's a great market. And so it was a confluence of events, but it doesn't surprise me at all that the NBA ratings are up because they just have so many big personalities playing.
And there's no doubt, Jimmy, I'll get weigh you in here. I don't know where you stand on this, but I think both John and I are in agreement on this. I think we've both written it. Star players and dynastic teams always rate well, and they are good for the leagues when it comes to television. So the Warriors and the Cavs are great for television. Some may think they're not great for competition, but they are great for television. And I would expect the Cavs-Warriors series to do phenomenal business, as good as last year and probably second to the last time Jordan played in a finals, which is 98. Jimmy, do you have any thoughts on what we're probably likely going to see the Warriors-Cavs? But more than that, why do you think the NBA rates, particularly in the playoffs right now?
Well, I mean, I think most people expect it to be Warriors-Cavaliers, except for maybe Andy Gray. And
you're just throwing in a name that literally 99% of the audience has no idea who it is.
They know who he is, and that's a really rude comment by you for a coworker.
It's not rude. You should just say who it is. Give his who he is.
Andy Gray works at Sports Illustrated, writes Hot Clicks, does SI Vault.
All right, better. Thank you.
You happy now?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, that's professional broadcasting.
Anyway, the point is, I think everyone wanted to see there's two things going on. People want to see if one of those teams can get taken down, and people want to see basically how those teams get to where they are. I mean, the interest in LeBron and Curry is off the charts, as you'd expect.
Durant, too. You agree?
I feel like there's not as much buzz with Durant. I mean, there's more buzz about the nonsense with the Warriors, with Draymond Green and dirty plays and, you know, what happened with Kawhi Leonard and all that. Durant, I feel like, is a quiet superstar. LeBron's out there. Steph Curry's out there. The Celtics, you know, they had the story with Isaiah Thomas. I think, you know, the John Wall is an up-and-comer. So I think there's a lot of story. The NBA can produce a lot of storylines for a lot of teams. Even if it's not a big market team, there's still stuff. James Harden just completely disappearing in that game and not even trying. And then you have Popovich. A lot of names, a lot of stuff. It doesn't even have to be a big market. The NBA's got personality, and people are interested in those players.
Yeah, and I think your point about Durant, I would just say that I think if the Warriors get to the finals, then I think he becomes obviously a central figure just because of he left the Thunder to win a title. He gets on this team. Now they got a shot at the title, so he becomes a major player. But you're right, though, like the Draymond and Curry, so much attention on those guys. I mean, the Warriors are like the Beatles, basically. You just like they're like one of these teams that just has so many stars that anything they do is news.
I think Durant will be a big story if the Cavaliers beat the Warriors, because if the Warriors win, they're already a minus like 400 favorite against the Cavaliers in the NBA Finals. I mean, everyone expects So, listen, the Cavaliers, you know, had to get every break last year to beat them, and now the Warriors add Durant. If they don't win, there's a serious problem there. So I think the Durant thing becomes a big deal if they don't beat the Cavaliers. If they beat the Cavaliers, they should have beat the Cavaliers.
John, I had a podcast with James Andrew Miller, or Jim Miller, who also is now part of this podcast, Fine Podcast Network, the digital media network with his Origins podcast. By the way, Miller, he will not say anything negative about anybody. This is why the guy writes best-selling books. Everybody loves him, clearly. But we talked about the ESPN layoffs. I have not talked about that with you and Jimmy. So, John, I'll start with you. You know, I know you wrote about this. We both have. We could do 5 hours on this, so I'll try to figure out sort of what would be interesting. But every person I've talked to at ESPN says, and they were saying this after the 2015 layoffs, but it really feels even more acute, maybe because it's just newer, that this really irrevocably sort of changes, this layoffs changes who they are. Like, it, working there feels different. People who work there have told me they're going to continue obviously on, and they're going to hire more people, most likely Adrian Wojnarowski, they'll announce any day. But what was the takeaway for you? Was the takeaway that it was just so many more than you expected? Was the takeaway that it's just people who were at the top of their craft and ESPN is just moving away from college and hockey? But I haven't had a chance to talk to you about this.
You know, my main takeaway from it is that as somebody that grew up in newspapers, first job in a newspaper, you know, in the early 90s, and I've said that's about, you know, more than two decades of just watching this happen. And ESPN, a couple of years ago, decided they were going to take on newspapers, and they were going to start doing like these local reporters. They were going to start following the team. They followed every team.
With ESPN Boston, ESPN Chicago.
Absolutely. And they were so successful, and ESPN is so on the ascendancy, and they thought they could solve the problems that have been killing publishers since 1990. So they paid good money, they hired good talent, and they staffed tons of markets. Well, the problems that publishers faced are the same problems ESPN faced, and it finally sort of caught up to them. So the talent, getting rid of the talent, I know a lot of people do want to talk about the rights fees and the declining sub bases, which are very real problems for ESPN. But for me, this happened because they made a decision that publishers have been making since, you know, the 1990s, and it wasn't a good business decision. I mean, in terms of strict business, and so I almost want to say welcome to the club of sorts, because we've seen this happen. This has been an awful like 20 years for the newspaper print business.
Yeah, and Jimmy and I both know about this. SI just had layoffs this week. In the last 2 weeks, people who listen to this podcast and read me know very well, I don't cover Sports Illustrated. They pay me. I think that's an inherent conflict. I've also worked there for two decades. I can't cover them, honestly. I absolutely recommend you following anyone who covers us, and I want us to be covered hard. And my editors and bosses should be asked those questions, and if these guys ever whack me and I'm still covering sports media, I'll be asking those questions as tough as hell. But Jimmy and I have gone through this, so we've seen colleague after colleague, some great people at our place lose their jobs, not based on merit at all, just based on a numbers game. And that's where, John, you're sort of getting to the point. You know, you look at the ESPN people. I mean, everybody knows Jane McManus is a very good friend of mine. We teach together at Columbia. Like, there were just so many people who were, like, so good at what they did. It had nothing to be based on merit. And that gets back to the question I really wanted to ask Skipper, because I, if nothing else, it would be nice to have, it's not going to change anything, but you'd like to know the calculus as to how they decided what they decided, because whether it's Jane or someone like Ethan Strauss, like I don't understand why you would get rid of a young, probably not too expensive, really talented writer reporter who covers the Warriors. Like I just honestly don't understand the calculus there, but somebody has to.
Or I'll bring up Brett McMurphy.
Great example.
He's somebody who broke news. He was on TV. He wrote stories online.
Arguably the best college newsbreaker in the country, right?
Yeah. And so that was the whole problem for me with what happened, was there was no rhyme or reason. They didn't just say like, well, we're getting rid of Sports Center anchors that we don't think are right,
or make too much money. But that would make sense. Like, Sports Center anchor X has too big a deal from 2012 that they signed, so we want to cut back because we are recalibrating Sports Center. We don't need as many of these high profile anchors. While I don't like that, that makes sense, right?
So what they were saying was that we need versatile people, but we just came up with three or four people who got fired who were versatile. So
I'm with you. I mean, and then if you talk about specialists like Ed Werder or Stark or Scott Burnside or any of the hockey guys. Like I realize you could do this calculus all day, and people have done this at Sports Illustrated, and it's totally legit. You know, Jim Trotter, was an incredible talent. It should not, you know, I still would say today is just a ridiculous mistake by SI. So I know you could do this with our own people, but, you know, Jimmy, I mean, you know, you're someone who's been through layoffs, so, you know, you've experienced this, but that's one thing I really wanted to ask Skipper, and even if I got a bullshit corporate answer, I just would have liked to have gotten some kind of public statement on, like, what was the calculus or rationale or the formula to decide on the people they decided?
Well, I mean, first of all, you're on crack if you think he's answering that question. I mean,
I don't think he's going to answer it, but I wanted to ask it. I get it.
I mean, there's no way you're getting it. But I don't like the argument you and John just made, only because, listen, I guess maybe because it happened to me, I look at it more as a – I look at it a little differently. But, like, yeah, you say, you know, oh, Brett McMurphy and Ethan Strauss and, you know, what's the reasoning there? But if it's not them, then it's two other people. And those two people are out of a job and don't have a salary and can't take care of their family. So, you know – the whole thing is just, I looked at it just more of like, you know, it was just a terrible day for the industry. You know, I think it's just horrific that those people get laid off, and it's a thing on Twitter, and we're all covering it. It's just, the whole thing is just really gross to me. The whole, from the beginning to end, and even just discussing it. I mean, these are people who need jobs now, and I don't like the whole thing. And like I said, you know, whatever reasons ESPN came up with for those 100 people, if they swapped out some people and they're swapping in others, and it sucks for everybody. It sucks for the coworkers. It sucks for the people who are left there. I mean, I know that's one of the things that happens here. You know, you see people go and you're like, oh my God, like, you feel guilty. I mean, the whole thing, it's horrible, everything about it. And it's just, you know, and we're going to all go through it again. That's the thing. It's not going to end. The ESPN's going to go through it again. We'll go through it again. It's just, unfortunately, the world we live in right now with, you know, the way digital media is consumed.
Yeah.
That's what to me was so bizarre about that. Because, you know, so I've covered layoffs a ton of times. I mean, a year and a half earlier, we covered 350 people that got laid off by ESPN.
Yep.
But these were all public people, and they all had social media accounts, and a huge percentage of them would find out during the day. It wasn't like they got everybody into one room, and right. So there was one big, this is what happened. It was just this drip, drip, drip. I've never experienced anything like this. I got the call and I'm gone, and it just kept going.
Yeah. Yeah, it was brutal. I mean, you know, as I wrote, I thought those people deserved the right to announce it on their own. I get the counter argument is that, NFL reporters cover cuts and transactions, et cetera. So I understand all sides of that argument. And I have no doubt if you're a reporter who's sort of gone through it and seen it in your newsroom, you're impacted very differently. All right, let's end as a – not the greatest segue here, but we'll end, John, on ESPN and the NFL, because when I announced that we were going to do a roundtable – people are really interested in that relationship, and understandably so. And one of the questions, John, for you specifically was, will competitors see the current ESPN situation and maybe a little weakness in ESPN as a chance to outbid them when the new NFL deal comes up? And the interesting thing there, and you cover this, is of course there's going to be new players in the marketplace, you know, whether it's like an Amazon or Twitter, Google, whoever. But it strikes me that the NFL negotiations for the next round are going to be really different, given the players are going to be different. At the same time, if you're the NFL, you know, there's inherent risk. You know, you've made this pledge with the public that your games are on network TV or the biggest cable platforms, and I would still tend to think that that will be the strategy, but I don't know. I mean, would the NFL ever just be like, all right, our new partners are Fox, CBS, and Google? I don't know. Would they do something like that, or what do you think?
Do they have enough money?
Yeah.
Well, you know, we've spent a lot of this pod killing ESPN, and it's been a tough early part of the year. But a reality check, ESPN is still the biggest, strongest sports network that there is, by far. I mean, they make more money on affiliate fees. So they've dropped from 100 to 80. So they're still more than Fox Sports One or NBC Sportsnet. They still bring in a ton of money. ESPN is fine. I mean, these cuts weren't because they're losing money. these cuts were because they weren't making as much money as they had been making before. They're still bringing in money. One thing about ESPN, though, you know, and everybody points to the rights fees for the NBA and for the NFL. Could you imagine them not having the NBA or NFL? I can't. I don't see anybody outspending Disney or ESPN.
No way.
For the NFL. I don't see it. I just don't see that happening. I think that they have to stay with the NFL as long as the NFL stays popular.
Yeah, I don't. They don't have a business, in my opinion, or a current business without the NFL. I don't, Jimmy. Do you see in your lifetime, you see ESPN not having the NFL? I mean, is that
the lifetime? I only went to the next round of rights.
All right. Well, I'm asking Jimmy to extend it.
Well, I mean, listen, no one would have thought CBS wouldn't have the NFL, so anything's possible.
Right.
You know, when they lost it to Fox originally. So, yeah, I mean, listen, any cable station could decide, you know, hey, we want to become a player and, you know, go, you know, TNT, TBS. I mean, look at TNT with. They're paying a ton of money for NBA. They used to have the NFL. They tied in with Bleacher Report. Who knows? Maybe when they decide they want to get back in the NFL business.
They got the Champions League coming. I love that.
But I would imagine ESPN would do everything in their power to keep the NFL because they know that without it, times would be even rougher.
John, you see Amazon or Twitter or Google really enhancing in the next round of negotiations to get a big package? Bigger than what they have?
That's the NFL's dream. Here's my prediction with those guys is that they're going to be involved in the next round, but they're going to be involved more as a partner than actually coming and getting it. Because, I mean, this isn't like, you know, they would need to hire their producers and game announcers. I mean, they're nowhere near qualified yet to produce football games. And I know it's not rocket science. I know it's been done before, but it's a pretty big expense and it takes a lot of planning.
You see ESPN ever losing the college football playoffs? Because I'm not sure I do. I feel like they would consider that property in the same way.
Isn't that contract like to 2050 or something like that?
So it's a long one. Do you know?
I forget off the top
of my head. The NCAA CBS one goes into the 2030s.
I think
the ESPN one goes into the mid-2020s.
I think the CFP goes mid-2020s.
Okay. So I don't see them losing that personally.
Here's where the big it depends comes in. So if you're the college football playoff, and let's say in the mid-2020s, ESPN's gone down to 50 million subs.
Right.
You know, all of a sudden, do you say, like, well, we'll sell it to you, but we need to be on ABC? I mean, so we don't know yet where everything's going.
2025, by the way, that goes to. So they got a while to go. Yeah. Jimmy, before we let you go, is there anything else you want to address that we did not address? I know you were probably glued to the set of the Derek Jeter night, right? I'm sure you were happy about ESPN covering that.
I watched the Yes coverage.
Well, so. You're a Yankee guy, of course.
Yes.
Didn't you get grossed out by all that coverage, Jimmy?
No one likes to do pomp and circumstance like the New York Yankees.
All right,
I'll just say that.
Jimmy, I'm giving you the floor. Is there anything else before we wind this up?
No, I mean, usually I have a ton of questions for you, but I don't think I have anything. I would like, one day, can we discuss the Bruce Pritchard podcast, the greatest podcast?
Yes.
Second, I would rank Bruce Pritchard podcast first, yours second.
I got no problem. First of all, I can't believe you put me second, so I'm happy about that. The Pritchard pod, Conrad Thompson was a guest on this podcast, and this podcast is a huge fan of that podcast. So that's the current best. I mean, you have to be a wrestling fan, but something to wrestle with, I think, is the current best podcast in sports right now, in my opinion. Part of my take is very good, too, but I think something to wrestle with is number one.
The only thing I want to do is just clear up that what I said, I don't know if people know this, but it is 100% true. The other day, I was sitting at my desk. Richard walks by. He looks up at one of the TV monitors we have hanging from the ceiling. He sees Bob Lee and Jeremy Schapp hosting First Take, and he just goes, oh, and walks by. Like, you would have thought the world ended.
You might be overselling that a little bit, but again, it was a little depressing to see. But listen, I know they gotta sell the soap for OTL and E60, and
you were physically disgusted.
Now you're overstating it a little bit.
No, I missed that. Did Bob Lee have a take? Did he actually have a take?
Yeah, he said that Robert Griffin III is not a real quarterback. all right, John, is there anything else that you want to finish with? Is there anything you want to say to one of the PR departments out there so maybe you get some scoops?
Yeah, you know what? I just want to say that I feel like I should tell a joke. I'm in a comedy club right now.
We do tape this in a comedy club. Which is kind of fantastic.
I think
we
the
love
biggest
these guys
story of this whole podcast that we need to stay with is that Fox did not invite Richard to the upfront.
I don't think that's as big a story as you think, Jimmy, because Mike McCarthy was not invited either. So it's
but he works for them basically.
Wow, we might have to edit that out.
Don't edit that out.
We'll leave it in, of course. Everything's left in on this podcast. All right, the guests have been John Oran of the Sports Business Daily. Check out his work, including an excellent piece the other day on Jerry Matalon, who was a former talent producer at ESPN who was laid off in 2015 and now is a talent consultant. And a lot of the ESPNers who were laid off are calling Jerry for advice and sort of how to rebrand them. That was a good piece, John.
You know what's amazing about that?
Matalon's a good guy. I like him a lot.
Yeah, he's a great guy. And I like the story. I wrote the story. The amount of activity that story got. I mean, there are people that are just that really want advice about how to do go through a layoff.
Yeah,
I mean it's a really big issue out there. I was really surprised at how popular that story ended up being.
Well, I mean, keep in mind, you know, you work for a industry publication that's read by so many people in the business, and so many people in the business, even if they weren't affected, were probably spooked by that. So that doesn't surprise me that story. I would expect that story would have been the highest traffic story that you guys published that day.
Oh, by far.
By far, yeah. Jimmy Zura, Jimmy Train, of course, Sports Illustrated.
No, I have nothing else. Let us go.
Train of Thoughts. Is there anything else you want to promote?
No. Train of Thoughts every day, SI.com, 12 o'clock.
No, catch that. I mean, what a sell job by Jimmy. So catch that every day.
It's enough, Richard. Just say goodbye.
At noon. All right. For John and Jimmy, for my producer, Lou Pellegrino, thank you very much for listening to these podcasts. I will let these guys hear me as I take us out. Previous podcast before Jimmy and John, Bob Lee and Jeremy Schapp on the ESPN layoffs and ESPN's future commitment to journalism. Royce Young of ESPN, who has an amazing story about he and his wife and his daughter. Jim Miller was a guest as well. We've had a lot of these media roundtables, obviously. Amy Trask, Kevin Harlan, Bob McCowan, and Dave Meltzer. We'll have some broadcasters coming up in the future, although no announcements now. Again, my thanks, as always, to Lou Pellegrino, my great producer. Thanks to Digital Media. Thanks to those who support this podcast at Sports Illustrated. We'll see you again on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
This has been a Digital Media production. Find your voice.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.